This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
the group of mainly women and children is the first to return to Cameroon after fleeing to Nigeria to escape fighting between government troops and separatists in Cameroon's troubled western regions.
That's Moki Edwin Kinzeka reporting from Yaoundé. Details coming up also. An Angolan court has frozen the assets of Africa's richest women. And Malawi's Human Rights Commission says police raped at least 8 women and violated several others during October's post-election unrest. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Kenyan security forces launched a manhunt today in coastal Lamu County after gunmen sprayed a passenger bus with bullets, killing at least 3 people and injuring 3 others. Lamu County Commissioner Irun Macharia said the bus had 2 other buses behind it, along with a police escort. When officers responded, the 10 or so attackers ran away into the heavy forest that lined both sides of the road from Mombasa. There was no immediate claim of responsibility, but the Islamist Al-Shabaab group has claimed previous attacks on vehicles traveling between Lamu and Mombasa. Most cars and buses using the road now travel with a security escort, which is a government requirement. In 2011, Kenya sent its troops to fight Al-Shabaab in Somalia. The group began launching attacks in Kenya soon after. The militants have built a cross-border network, radicalizing and recruiting youth to fight in Somalia and carrying out attacks within Kenya. The president of Angola, João Lourenço, campaigned on an anti-corruption platform, and it seems he is delivering on that promise somehow. Being Isabel dos Santos, the 46-year-old daughter of former Angolan president José Eduardo dos Santos, with a fortune estimated at $2.2 billion by Forbes magazine, has recently been charged by an Angolan court. To brief us on the matter, we have in studio João Santa Rita from VOA's Portuguese to Africa service. Welcome to Africa News Tonight.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
João Eduardo dos Santos' 38th rule as president was marked by widespread corruption in which billions of dollars of state funds went missing. So this comes as no surprise. What is going on with Isabel dos Santos, who is often described as Africa's richest woman?
Indeed. And so what happens now is that gradually the government of João Lourenço launched, as you said, this anti-corruption campaign. And there's been many high officials arrested, including the former head of the central bank, former minister of transport. And of course, the son of Eduardo dos Santos, Filomeno dos Santos, is under house arrest on trial for allegedly siphoning off about $500 million to London. And now came the daughter. Now, what happened, I must emphasize here, what the court did is a provisional freezing of the assets of Isabel dos Santos in Angola. But what the court documents show, and this is quite relevant, is that contrary to what she always said and the father always said, it shows that there was great nepotism in the way that she was supplied with money from the state to form companies which then made investments overseas. And what the government is alleging is that although the oil company and the diamond company were putting money to create companies for Isabel dos Santos, they were never paid back. So this is basically, there's no criminal accusation. There's only so far an accusation that the money is owed and she hasn't paid. And what the government alleges is that she's been taking all her assets out of Angola, and therefore they need to freeze it before there's nothing left. And so they froze about 3 or 4 bank accounts and 12 companies. I mean, these companies range from the from the cell phone company to a bank to a soft drink company. So they froze all these assets of these companies, alleging that they owed money that hasn't been paid. But as I emphasize, what the documents show very clearly is that there were orders from the president for state companies to supply money to her and her husband to form these companies that then would invest in things like jewelry and others. And a very serious allegation is that the president also ordered the diamond company to sell Isabel dos Santos' company diamonds at below the market price, which she would then use on a company, a jewelry company. So, I mean, it's a big document and there's all these allegations.
But Isabel dos Santos heads a vast business empire controlling companies in Angola and Portugal. And in a statement on Twitter, she said this is all politically motivated.
Well, she might have a point, because what happens here, it's politically and economics. What happens here is that, as you said, President João Lourenço launched his campaign based on the fight against corruption. But what happens is that the corrupt web started with the president and his family, and then there were circles of corruption. So what you have now is basically a political fight between two factions within the ruling party, the faction of João Lourenço, which makes anti-corruption fight necessary for the survival of the country and the regime, and the old faction led by the dos Santos family, which controlled this vast web of corruption. So what João Lourenço has done, what the government of João Lourenço, is that you had the arrest of the son, you had the expulsion of his other daughter from parliament, you had the taking away of a TV company to another son that was controlled by another son, and now this on the daughter. And of course, the president, the daughter, and the other daughter who was an MP, they all overseas and they're not going to return.
João Santa Rita from VOA's Portuguese to Africa service, thank you for your input.
Thank you very much.
A person identified only as an Angolan native and French citizen has died in Immigration and Customs Enforcement custody in the U.S. state of New Mexico. A statement from Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, said the person died on Sunday at a hospital in Albuquerque, New Mexico. An autopsy is being performed to determine the cause of death, and federal immigration officials have notified the Consulate General of France in Washington. French officials are trying to contact the person's relatives. According to the French news agency AFP, this is the latest in a number of deaths during a U.S. crackdown on illegal immigrants. This death, AFP report, follows that of Nabane Abenewi, 37, of Cameroon, who I said died in custody in San Diego, California, in October after a brain hemorrhage. Cameroon has received the first group of returning asylum seekers and former rebels who had fled to Nigeria to escape the separatist conflict in Cameroon's western regions. But the group of 87 refugees say they want assurances that peace has returned before they will go back to the troubled English-speaking regions. Moki Edwin Kenzaka reports from Yaoundé.
A chartered plane from the Nigerian city of Lagos landed at Yaoundé's international airport late Tuesday with 87 Cameroonian asylum seekers and former separatists on board. The group of mainly women and children is the first to return to Cameroon after fleeing to Nigeria to escape fighting between government troops and separatists in Cameroon's troubled western regions. Cameroon authorities say they returned voluntarily under an agreement with Nigeria and that at least 700 asylum seekers and rebels are expected to return before the end of February. 29-year-old Marie Nash fled the English-speaking southwestern town of Mamfi 2 years ago when fighting first broke out. But she decided to return amid renewed talk of peace.
Because of the war, I have experienced a lot of things. I just thank God because they want to bring peace to Cameroon, and I'm very happy for that. I want everybody to come back so that we should not fight again. Let us make peace.
Among the returnees are former separatist fighters like Success Nkongo, who led an armed group called Ground Zero before he fled to Nigeria in October. He decided to return to Cameroon shortly after the government showed efforts to address the conflict, he says, including holding an October national dialogue.
Prior to the national dialogue, I was invited, though I didn't come then. Today I'm here with other combatants and refugees, asylum seekers. We have come home and we wish to say, please, kindly give us another chance.
Former rebel Leonard Nyambere says he is still in touch with separatists who want to surrender but do not trust authorities' offer of reintegration.
Some of us think that the government want to trick us or to kill us. That's why most of our brothers are still in the forest. My friend and my brothers understand that the Cameroon of yesterday is not the Cameroon of today. Everything cannot be solved by gun.
Other separatist fighters on social media described Nyambere and Congo as sellouts to Cameroon's government and have called for their capture. The former rebels will enter rehabilitation and reintegration programs before being released. Despite the risk and ongoing conflict, Cameroon authorities are urging the asylum seekers to return to their homes in the English-speaking western regions. Cameroon Territorial Administration Minister Paul Atanganji says there is peace in areas where they have been distributing aid with no attacks from separatist fighters.
It is a clear indication that there is no humanitarian crisis in Cameroon. I think about 5,000 families have gone back to the northwest and southwest region, which is a clear indication that things are coming back to normalcy.
But the returnees are staying with relatives in Yaoundé and say they are reluctant to go home until all fighting ends and authorities reconstruct villages and towns destroyed in the conflict. In December, Cameroon's parliament gave special status for the English-speaking regions in a further effort to halt the conflict. The special status creates more elected local leader positions for the two English-speaking regions. It also cedes some powers to elected mayors, such as authority to recruit hospital staff and teachers. Unrest erupted in Cameroon's English-speaking regions in 2017 after teachers and lawyers protested discrimination by the country's French-speaking majority. Cameroon's military cracked down hard as separatists took up arms. The UN says the conflict has left at least 3,000 people dead, dispatched 500,000, and led tens of thousands to flee to neighboring Nigeria. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Guinea-Bissau's opposition leader and former Prime Minister, Umaro Sissoco Embalo, is celebrating his victory in the country's presidential election, even as his opponent seeks to have the poll thrown out over alleged voting irregularities. The Electoral Commission said Embalo won 54% of the vote to 46% for Domingo Simoes Pereira of the ruling PAGIC party. Embalo vowed to implement dramatic change, saying the country will be respected and inclusionary. He told supporters that Guinea-Bissau will stop being the country you have known, a Guinea-Bissau where anyone does just anything. Despite Pereira's claim of electoral fraud, election monitors have not reported any fraud, and the UN envoy for West Africa, Mohamed Ibn Chambas, cited no irregularities. Embalo succeeds President José Mário Vaz, whose tenure was marred by political infighting, an ill-functioning parliament, and corruption. A report released under Malawi's Human Rights Commission says police raped at least 8 women and sexually assaulted several others, including girls, during October's post-election unrest. The report by Malawi's ombudsman says the assaults were carried out in revenge for the stoning death of a police officer. Authorities are questioning the validity of the report, and police say they will only act after carrying out their own inquiry. Lamek Masina reports from Lilongwe.
25-year-old Grace, not her real name, cries as she tells a reporter how two Malawian police officers stormed her house in October looking for her husband. They accused him of being involved in street violence, she says, which broke out during ongoing protests over the re-election of President Peter Mutharika in May. Grace says one of the policemen accused her of hiding her husband's whereabouts and then attacked her. She says one of them entered the house and found her sitting. He pushed her down and started to undress her, says Grace. He tore off her underwear and then raped her, she says. After raping her, he stepped on her private parts with his boots, adds Grace. After finding out about the attack, the mother of one says her husband divorced her. 27-year-old Rhoda, also not her real name, tells a reporter a similar story of being attacked by Malawian police. She says when she told her husband about the attack, he said he could not stay with someone who was raped for fear of contracting sexually transmitted disease. Grace and Rhoda are among a number of women and girls who rights officials say were raped or sexually assaulted by police sent to control post-election violence on October 8. The alleged assaults were outlined in a 62-page report released December 18 by Malawi's ombudsman, Martha Chizuma, and law commissioner, Rosemary Kanyuka. Chizuma says the investigation carried out under Malawi's Human Rights Commission uncovered evidence of the rapes.
We found that 8 out of 17 women were sexually violated. 5 of them are those under 18. One of the 5 young girls was actually defiled. 8 women were actually raped. The rest, the police found them when having their messes, so it was just violently beaten.
Chizuma says the alleged police assaults appeared to be a revenge of the stoning death of a fellow police officer by election protesters. The report identified suspected officers who were posted to the areas where the assaults occurred. But observers note a lack of evidence as victims failed to obtain medical exams after the alleged assaults and were unable to identify police officers whose faces were covered. Malawi police have not confirmed or denied the assaults and have taken information from the alleged victims. Police spokesman James Kadadzela says they are carrying out their own internal investigation, which started in October.
And we are saying here that whatever the MHRC report is recommending, whatever our report will recommend, that will be followed to its logical conclusion. Nobody will be shielded, but justice will prevail.
Kadadzela was not able to say when the police would finish their probe. Meanwhile, no officers have yet been suspended, let alone detained, and government authorities are questioning the validity of the report. Government spokesman Mark Bottoman told the Nation newspaper that any action by Malawi's Human Rights Commission should be scrutinized because there were no authorized commissioners. The MHRC has been waiting for fresh commissioners since a court injunction stopped some controversial appointments by President Mutharika. But Chizuma and Kanyuka argue they are still members of the commission as their appointments were not part of the injunction. They have called for immediate disciplinary action against the suspects. Malawi has seen a wave of violent protests since Mutharika secured a second term in May, which opposition leaders are challenging in court. Meanwhile, rights campaigners have threatened to hold protests should the police fail to act on the recommendation of the report by January 9. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Lilongwe.
2019 saw a disease that's totally preventable claim the lives of more than 140,000 people, mostly children and babies, all because they missed getting two doses of the measles vaccine. VOA's Carol Pearson reports the unvaccinated children created a pathway for measles outbreaks globally.
Samoan parents never expected to face such grief.
I was shocked. It was very hard for me to accept what happened.
It's very hard to lose a child. She's gone and I never forget her the way I try to teach her how to talk.
Measles claimed the lives of more than 80 Samoans, mostly children and infants.
Two shots of a vaccine could have saved those children's lives.
The vaccination rate in Samoa dropped to about 30% after two children died from a measles vaccine that was mixed with a muscle relaxant instead of water. Parents panicked, and anti-vaccination activists convinced them to avoid the vaccine. Then measles exploded on the island.
The hospitals and health clinics were overrun with very sick children. And there weren't enough healthcare workers and hospital beds to adequately deliver the services that they needed.
The Samoan government started a massive vaccination effort. It then turned to the CDC for help.
CDC also was asked to do training of healthcare workers to ensure safe vaccine delivery, as well as to monitor the quality of the immunization campaign that took place.
In 2019, more than 400,000 cases of measles were reported globally, with an additional 250,000 cases in the Democratic Republic of Congo. In the first 3 months of 2019, the number of measles cases tripled over the same period last year.
The main reason for failure to vaccinate against measles is families, communities are not having access to the vaccine.
Two doses of the measles vaccine will protect children from the disease. Yet conflict and poor health systems in low-income countries prevent families from vaccinating their children. In rich countries, vaccinations are declining too. Some parents are opting out of immunizations. The United States tops the list with 2.5 million children missing their first dose of the measles vaccine. In 2019, the CDC reported that more than 1,000 cases of measles in 31 states by late December, the highest number in 25 years.
Then in the United States now, we've got measles outbreaks and epidemics are becoming a new normal in this country after we've eliminated measles in 2000.
The WHO took away the measles eradication status of four European countries because of outbreaks and their low immunization rates.
In other words, we're backsliding.
Samoa concluded its state of emergency just before 2019 ended, but the resurgence of measles remains a global health problem. Unless children get vaccinated, there will be more deaths and more measles outbreaks in 2020. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Patrick Dea, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports, Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.